Welcome to Bullish, a podcast featuring stories from the incredible world of Bitcoin, blockchain, and crypto. Bullish is made by me, Rob Finch, a crypto entrepreneur who first dove down the Bitcoin rabbit hole back in 2013. Since then, I've participated in dozens of blockchain ecosystems, some small and some large, and have launched several of my own crypto companies. On Bullish, I'll tell you stories about a variety of crypto-related topics. Learn about decentralized virtual worlds, dystopian futures like Bitcoin citadels, investment stories about time preference, and so much more. Ultimately, one thing is for sure. The future for crypto is Bullish. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. I spent the last week in a virtual world. A world that I have spent thousands of hours of playtime in over the last 15 years of my life. That world is the World of Warcraft, a game that has changed my real life in a number of unquantifiable ways. From helping me ace the English portion of my SAT in high school, thanks to the thousands of quests I read, to learning how to type at an incredible rate of speed to communicate with my party members, World of Warcraft has undoubtedly made a significant impact on my life. This past week, due to incredible community demand, the developers of World of Warcraft relaunched the original version of the game, World of Warcraft Classic. WoW Classic, as it's commonly called, is the original world that so many people, myself included, fell in love with before countless changes and additions to the game were made. But this wasn't an easy feat. You see, Blizzard Entertainment, now Activision Blizzard, has control over the World of Warcraft. They are the central entity that determines what stays, what goes, and whether or not you can continue to play the game. For years, Blizzard stated that they would never make a classic version of WoW. In fact, the now famous statement by J. Allen Brack is a bit of a meme within the WoW Classic community. BlizzCon is an annual community event for fans of Blizzard games, World of Warcraft included, and also offers players the unique opportunity to ask the developers questions about current and future versions of those games. When asked about classic servers at BlizzCon 2013, J. Allen Brack responded with this iconic phrase.
No. And by the way, you don't want to do that either. You think you do, but you don't.
You think you do, but you don't. This phrase, issued by one person at one centralized entity which controls a world full of millions of players, is one that struck a chord with many in the community. It became a challenge, one final quest for the player base to complete. With no interest from Blizzard, many players started spinning up their own versions of Classic WoW, launching illegal private servers where hundreds of thousands of players played. One of the most famous illegal WoW Classic servers, Elysium, had a mission statement which stated they would exist until Blizzard decided to launch a server of their own, something most people never dreamed would happen. Nearly 4 years later, at BlizzCon 2017, the very same man that issued the iconic statement,
"You think you do, but you don't,"
stood on stage to announce to the community that they had completed that quest.
And I want to talk about ice cream. Ice cream is great. Ice cream is one of my favorite desserts. Personally, I love chocolate, and I love cookies and cream. Cookies and cream is actually my all-time favorite dessert. But I understand that for some of you, your favorite flavor is vanilla.
WoW Classic was being released by Blizzard and would launch in the summer of 2019. Now, of course, there was great speculation within the community about whether or not this would actually occur. Was this just a decoy to get Elysium and the countless other private servers to shut down? Or was this the real intent of the multi-billion dollar company? After the launch this past week, we finally got our answer. WoW Classic is real, and it's here to stay. Last Monday, my friends and I gathered around my dining room table, setting up our computers and getting ready to dive into Azeroth once again, like we did nearly 15 years ago. The servers came online at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we rushed into the starting zones, which were filled to the brim with more players than I could count. We raced these players to complete the starting quests as fast as possible and get ahead of the pack. What followed was 4 days of very little sleep and a ton of fun as we relived our memories of the world we fell in love with, that original World of Warcraft. I made it to level 30 around the same time the first player in the world hit the level cap of 60, a feat the 12-year-old me would have been incredibly proud of. Throughout the week as we played, the demand to log in continued, resulting in server queues of tens of thousands of players per server. That means there were tens of thousands of people on each server waiting in line to play, on top of the tens of thousands that were already logged into each online server. As the week continued, server queues on some European realms reached 100,000 players, which forced Blizzard to raise the player cap on each server and even launch several more to accommodate the vast player base. It's estimated that more than 100 million people have played World of Warcraft over the past 15 years, and it was clear that a significant chunk of those players came to see the original version of that world they once loved. Even Blizzard, the creators of the game, the developers which thought there was no demand for classic WoW, were shocked by the response of the community. They were very transparent of the fact that they believed the server population numbers and login queues would dramatically drop after the first day, but it appeared the opposite actually happened. As more people logged in and got a taste of that original world, they reached out to old friends and convinced them to log in as well. Over the course of the launch week, I met up with many old online friends that I haven't spoken to in years. Friends that I met in the original World of Warcraft more than a decade ago. Although all of us have taken different paths in the physical world, one thing has remained the same. Our paths in the virtual world were controlled by one single entity, Blizzard Entertainment. You see, despite community outcry for years, Blizzard was of the opinion that no one wanted Classic.
You think you do, but you don't.
It's too hard, they said. You can't port directly to a dungeon. There's no group finder. You have to interact with other players to form groups and kill powerful enemies. That single entity known as Blizzard had the power to limit our interactions in a virtual world and change that world over time to a world so few of us recognized as World of Warcraft any longer. As more and more of our lives are digitized and more people spend so much time in virtual worlds, this iconic example brings up an interesting question. How do we decentralize control of virtual worlds into the hands of players and out of the hands of massive multi-billion dollar companies that are largely focused solely on profit rather than making fun games the players would enjoy? In fact, I'm not the only one to think of this question. Vitalik Buterin, co-founder of Ethereum, quoted one of his main motivations for creating Ethereum as it relates to World of Warcraft.
I happily played World of Warcraft during 2007 to 2010, but one day, Blizzard removed the damage component from my beloved Warlock's Siphon Life spell. I cried myself to sleep, and on that day, I realized what horrors centralized services can bring.
It may sound silly, but when you invest thousands of hours of playtime into a virtual world, changes like Vitalik described can destroy your virtual life. A character class that was once powerful can be nerfed overnight by the developers, rendering all of that time spent worthless in the eyes of the player. Another popular online game, RuneScape, seems to have taken a hybrid approach to decentralizing control of their virtual world. After following the similar path as Blizzard by making countless changes and additions to their original game, many players in their player base demanded classic servers. Known as Old School RuneScape or OSRS, these new servers were meant to capture the spirit and feeling of that original RuneScape world. And they were incredibly successful. Old School RuneScape now has more players online at any given time than the quote-unquote current version of the RuneScape world. But this success is likely due to the hybrid approach to decentralizing control of Old School RuneScape. You see, rather than continuing to make top-down decisions without the consent or input of the player base, the developers at Jagex decided to give the players a seat at the executive table. Now, anytime new content is released into the world of Old School RuneScape, players are able to vote on that content by logging in and using an in-game poll. This ensures that the entire player base has the opportunity to impact the future of the world in which they have invested so much time and energy. No longer is a single entity controlling their world, and instead, the players now have a direct way to control the outcome of their game. But there are still problems with this hybridized approach. First, there's no proof that the poll results are accurate and not manipulated by Jagex for their own motives, and while there's no direct, obvious incentive for them to manipulate these polls, the fact is that they cannot yet be verified. And second, not all changes or additions to Old School RuneScape are able to be voted on, which leaves the player base out of some critical decisions, even though they get to participate in some. While the system Jagex has developed for Old School RuneScape is a fantastic step in the right direction, it is still not truly decentralized, where players have total control. Announced back in 2017, Decentraland is a blockchain-based virtual world where the players not only govern the world, but they actually own the world too. Aspiring digital landlords can buy and sell tokenized land from other players using the Ethereum blockchain. And since the launch of the marketplace in 2017, millions of dollars worth of digital land has traded hands on a truly decentralized marketplace, and I was one of those hands trading land back and forth. That means not even the creators of the Decentraland world can take your land from you or prohibit you from trading it. You own the rights to your land, your sovereign plot in the digital world. Although Decentraland has yet to launch their actual world, like many other projects on Ethereum, the concept is incredibly ambitious and provides an exciting window into the potential world of tomorrow. Now, Decentraland is not the first blockchain game by any means, but it is the first to create a world where players truly own their land. Created initially in response to the centralization issues plaguing Second Life, a digital world launched in 2003 by Linden Labs, Decentraland aimed to fix the issues that Second Life brought to light. You see, in Second Life, players could own virtual property, but could not trade it in a decentralized manner. Many ambitious players made hundreds of thousands of dollars building up virtual businesses which generated revenue and then sold those businesses to others. One well-known player developed a reputation for creating virtual strip clubs, bringing them to profitability, and then flipping them to the highest bidder for a massive profit. Unfortunately, players had no control over the virtual world of Second Life, which led to events in which the developers of the game, Linden Labs, would make changes that cost players hundreds of thousands of dollars in real-world value. One day, your property may be generating revenue, and the next day, it could be destroyed in an instant due to a change from Linden Labs, the creators of the game. Everything in the world, from the land title registry to the currency used in the game known as the Linden Dollar, was centralized and under the control of Linden Labs. At one point, these economy-crushing centralization events got so bad that the player base coined a term for them known as Acts of Linden. These Acts of Linden are a fantastic historic example of why digital worlds, especially digital worlds owned by the player base, need to be truly decentralized and out of the hands of a centralized third party. Other blockchain games have begun to take a similar approach to Decentraland by tokenizing their in-game items and avatars and allowing players to trade those items in a decentralized manner. However, many games still fall short due to centralization events which harm the player-created economy. EOS Knights, a popular RPG on the EOS blockchain, ran into similar issues when the developers mismanaged the economy in the eyes of the players. You see, while all of the items in EOS Knights were tokenized and tradable on the internal marketplace, control of those items ultimately fell in the hands of the developers. Things like drop rates, new items, crafting material changes, and so much more resulted in the player base ultimately revolting against the developers. In what was likely an unprecedented move in the gaming industry, many players banded together and forked EOS Knights. Yes, they forked the entire game, that is, they copied it and made it their own, and rebranded it to Crypto Heroes. Crypto Heroes had a self-described mission statement of reworking the game engine and fixing the mistakes of the EOS Knights developers. Although largely unsuccessful, the fork is an incredible example of the power organized players have over developers, even when parts of the system remain centralized. Ultimately, all of these examples, WoW Classic, Old School RuneScape, Decentraland, Second Life, and EOS Knights, point us to one conclusion. Players want more control over their virtual lives, especially when those virtual lives are such a significant part of their real-world identities, and in some cases, their real-world incomes. The old paradigm of developers maintaining complete control over games they release and the in-game economies their players build is coming to an end and resulting in the rise of a new paradigm, one in which players have full control and ownership over the entire digital world with new, decentralized economies and governance structures. While it still remains to be seen if Decentraland will usher in that new paradigm, I am confident that there will be a killer game in the near future that helps give control back to the players. I am incredibly bullish on the future of blockchain gaming and virtual worlds so long as control of those virtual worlds is put in the hands of the player base rather than a few developers who think they know what players want but actually don't.
You think you do, but you don't.
A phrase more appropriately applied to the developers sitting on stage at BlizzCon 2013 than the players whom were initially targeted by that now infamous phrase. While I wait for that next killer decentralized game to launch, you can find me and Azeroth in the World of Warcraft, grinding away and reliving my childhood in that incredible, albeit centralized, virtual world. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Bullish. If you were one of the people like me that dove down the Azeroth rabbit hole this past week and logged into Classic WoW, please tweet me at Finchify, F-I-N-C-H-I-F-Y, and let me know what class you played. I usually play Horde in retail as a now Zandalari troll hunter, survival hunter at that. But now in Vanilla WoW, my friends and I decided to go back to the Alliance, so I am playing a dwarf rogue, currently spec'd as assassination. So let me know if you dove down that rabbit hole, tweet me at Fidgify and let me know what you played. And of course, if you haven't already, subscribe so you can catch next week's episode. Remember, stay bullish, and I'll see you next time.